Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Where's the beef?
Hey, how you doing?
Hold on to your butt.
Feels like an Arby's snack.
Son of a... That's gonna leave a mark.
Chili, baby, back rib.
Well, what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
This is Tom and Jim's Top 5. Naming their top 5 lists on everything pop culture. Celebrating the 90s, sports, movies, music, and more. They're not authorities, just grown children. Here's your hosts, Tom Skull and Jim Doubt.
And strange enough, that's how I learned that grilled dolphin tastes like baked bald eagle.
Really? Really?
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Is this when you were hunting with Charlton Heston or Ted Nugent?
Ted Nugent.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. He's more of a bald eagle eater, I would think.
Right.
Charlton Heston's just more of a confused old man that just needs to be brought back to the home.
Yes.
I'm going to say this right now. I hate that guy.
Which one now? Charlton Heston?
Yeah.
Right right after Ten Commandments played?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't like any of his movies either. Planet of the Apes sucks. He sucks. I hate that guy. From my cold, dead hands. Kiss my ass. All right.
You know, it sparked such a chord. I didn't even bring him up. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay.
You aren't even mad that I ate dolphin. You're mad about Charlton Heston.
Well, dolphin's got to be a delicacy in some cultures.
In this make-believe story.
Well, anyway, hey, everybody. This is Tom and Jim's Top 5. I am Tom, and on the other line with me is dolphin-eating Jim Doubt. Jim Doubt. That's D-O-U-T-T. Mail can be sent to P.O. Box. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, I like dolphins.
I love dolphins. Hey, when you went to Florida, you said you canoed with some dolphins. I think you talked about this last week. You canoed with some dolphins.
Kayak, but kayak. Pretty much the same thing.
Were they actually in the kayak, like, paddling with you? Because that's a pretty smart dolphin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we shared a cigar.
Nice, nice. Oh, I'd love to share a cigar with a dolphin.
I know. Now, do you put it in its nose? Do you put it in its blowhole? Where do you put the cigar?
Well, that's a little personal, don't you think?
It's got to be. It's got to. Well, it was an of age dolphin.
Oh, all right.
I don't kayak with underage dolphins, Tom.
No. That's not good. That's something someone in our current administration might do, but that's not something we would do. So I'm a little salty today, Jim. I'm sorry.
No pun intended.
Hello. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I had a tuna fish sandwich tonight. What'd you have?
I made
a dolphin.
I made some chicken, made some red beans and rice.
Nice.
It was a tasty little treat.
Nice. It's Miller time. Okay. So that's what you had. Yeah, I sent you a little text. I said, I'll come on over and just fix me up a plate. But didn't get there in time.
No, I'm a fast eater.
I've heard that about you.
Said that about you.
Nice. We had some rice and sausage and rice. You ever hear of Zatarain's, Jim?
Yeah, that's actually the red beans and rice I had.
Perfect. Yeah, we had the jambalaya mix. Fantastic.
Well, this is really weird.
This is weird. This is why we do this show, because we're the two only morons that would have the same thing for dinner on a Monday evening, and we're 1,000 miles apart.
Wow. All right, let's get on with this. Let's start this madness.
Okay, like I said, this is Tom and Jim's Top 5. I am Tom, that's Jim. Doubt doesn't eat dolphin, kayaks with them, but doesn't eat them. What are we doing this week, Jim? I don't even know what the hell's going on.
We are doing cult classic movies.
Oh, this sparked a debate on my Facebook account, I'll tell you that right now.
Do tell me right now.
I don't know. No, I just said that just to say it and not tell the story.
Oh, okay.
I put it out there on our Facebook account, on our Tom and Jim's Facebook. I said, you know, we're doing cult classic movies. What's your top five? And I put it out there, and then I shared it on my personal one, so a lot of my friends saw it. You know, people I consider friends. I don't know. But and people were responding with some good ones, but there was like a lot on there that Not a lot, but there's some on there I'm like, well, I don't know if I consider that a cult classic. And then I start researching a little bit. This is a wide genre. Like, you could really go anywhere with this. And
you really can, yeah.
So I basically did my list of movies that not everyone loves. Most of them didn't do big in the box office. They were more of like people rented them, you know, kind of thing. And it became big that way. And that kind of cult following. Because there were some lists out there that had, like, Star Wars as a cult classic because there's such a cult following. I'm like, well, okay.
No.
Yeah, but no. I mean, yeah. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. So.
No, to me, it's kind of a not popular movie that has a huge fan base, and it's a very particular fan base.
Yeah.
And this was really hard. Like you were saying, it's really hard because there's a ton of movies that are listed as cult classics and that were probably cult classics to me. And this is totally my opinion, 10 years ago, but now they're more mainstream, and mainstream movies can't be cult classics in my opinion. So
right.
movies like Office Space, when that came out, what, 15 years ago or something, that was a cult classic.
Right.
And then it became more mainstream, and now everybody's seen that movie.
That was,
I think we brought up Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
Was one that we brought up. Well, to me, that's my favorite movie of all time, and everybody I know has seen that movie at least a dozen times. It's not a cult classic if everybody's seen that movie.
Right.
To me.
See, that's okay. See, that's kind of how I went with my those are two movies you mentioned that are going to spark a little debate with people, I think. People love Office Space. I agree. It did horrible in the theater. Horrible. But it became so big. So, and it is one of my, I love that movie as a comedy, but I left it off my list, and I'm assuming you did too. So if you're listening to our show, waiting to hear Office Space, this is it. This is what we're talking about. And then we're not talking about it again. And then Dazed and Confused, another one. Now we have a show coming up in May that we're going to talk about our favorite summertime movies, and Dazed and Confused might make that list for one of us, just so you know, because I consider that a movie about summertime. It's the last day of school, that kind of stuff. So that might make that list, but it ain't making this one. Does that make sense?
It makes sense for me.
Why do we care? It's our list.
I know. We're trying to justify our choices here. And another one that we talked about, because we don't talk about our list, but we'll text each other, like especially on this one. It was like, hey, is this movie one? Do you think this movie is? We brought up The Big Lebowski. That I think that's another one that maybe 10 years ago was a cult classic movie, but now it's really a mainstream movie. Everybody's seen The Big Lebowski, and it's a great movie. I'm not trying to discredit it. I just don't think that anymore it is still a cult classic. And you might be able to argue the same things with some of the ones on my list that I chose, and people can feel free to write in and go, no, that is not a cult classic movie. But We'll see.
You know what, Jim? Let's just do this. For the next hour or so, hopefully only about an hour, let's just talk about some cool movies. How's that?
Deal.
We're going to talk about some cool movies. And Big Lebowski came up a lot on these lists. If you Google, you know, cult classic movies, Big Lebowski comes up a lot. Great, but I'm not putting it on. We're going to talk about some fun movies, and I'm excited about it. Real quick, though, Jim, last week, couple comments. Listener, one comment came from on Twitter last night, laying in bed, and the thing pops up, scared the hell out of me. But it was listener Carla said, please do a top five PlayStation games. And I'm thinking, well, it's in the works already. We're going to have to do a top five
PlayStation
games.
That's a good one, yeah.
We'll do that. And speaking of Twitter, I sent out I like the tweet. Usually I handle the Twitter stuff, and I sent out top five Easter movies, and I put forget it, just happy Easter, because it begins and ends with Mallrats. I would think that's the only Easter movie I can think of, but that's just so there's that. And then we got a comment from listener Kelly. We love her, and she said she loves the music that we've been editing in when we talk about our picks. And I don't know if you noticed, because I don't know if you actually listen to our show, Jim, but I've been putting music, the music of what we're talking about. And so we appreciate it. I guess it sounds like it's more professionally done. And believe you me, there's nothing professional about this show. But it's just basically I have some time on my hands, and I'm just doing something I don't know if I'm trying to avoid my family, avoid sleep, who knows. But I'm doing it. It sounds good. I'm glad people are noticing.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job, Tom.
Thank you. And if you want to call us or talk, no, don't call me. God, don't call me. But if you want to tell us, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And you can email us at tomandjimstop5@gmail.com, which I don't think we've received one email, so that's awesome. We get them once in a while.
I was on iTunes today. I'm rarely on iTunes, but I was on there for work.
Yeah.
And people have commented on our podcast on iTunes.
Oh, really? I have to. Yeah. We'll discuss that after the show because I don't want my feelings hurt right now. But I would like to know what those comments were later on.
I will tell you later
on. Okay. But Jim, I mentioned Instagram. You posted. Yesterday was Easter. We're recording this the day after Easter here. And you posted a great picture on Instagram yesterday.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell them about it? Or?
Nope, they're going to have to log on to find out what this great picture is.
There you go.
It's Jay and Silent Bob beating up the Easter Bunny from Mallrats.
This one's for Brody.
This is for Brody. Oh, and then I believe it might have been the same day, I was going through my closet and I found some cassette tape singles. Did you see that picture that I posted?
Oh, no, I missed that one.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah, I found... remember the cassette tape singles and the cardboard sleeves?
For cassette tapes, as music tapes, yeah.
Cassette tapes, yeah. I found a stack of those in my closet.
Oh, I love those things.
Yes.
Nice, cool. Well, anyway, yeah, you can get a hold of us on all those social media accounts and whatnot. And Jim, let's just get right into it. What do you say with our cult classic movies?
Yes, let's do this.
All right. Who started? I think I started? No, you started. Damn it, why do we do this every time? I never know who starts.
I started last time. You go.
Okay, I'll go. My number five is, I think if you've ever seen TBS, you ever turned that channel on, this has been on, or TNT. And my number five is a 1990 horror flick called Tremors.
That's a great movie.
I love Tremors, dude. You shouldn't like, just the premise of it, you should hate this movie. It's a great movie. It's an awesome movie.
It makes me want to buy an Atlanta Hawks hat.
There you go. Of course, it starts, Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward, Finn Carter, Michael Gross, and Reba McEntire, who is, this is her first movie.
Yeah.
Her first movie here. And so this is definitely a cult movie. This actually has spawned four more sequels, three sequels, a prequel, and a TV series. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's Tremors 2, Aftershocks, came out in 1996. Tremors 3, Back to Perfection, 2001. That sounds like a title.
It's an
of
odd
a,
title.
Like a title of a Britney Spears CD. Then the prequel was Tremors 4. Even though it was a prequel, they still called it Tremors 4. The Legend Begins, it came out in 2004, and then in 2015, Tremors 5 Bloodlines. Because I think once you get that far, it just becomes, you have to say Bloodlines. So, and then there was a Tremors series that lasted 1 year, one season in March through August of 2003, which I don't know anything about. I don't know anything about any of the, I haven't watched any of these sequels or anything like this. But
no.
Getting back to Tremors, I freaking love this movie. And it is a cult classic. It was one that did not do well in the box office, but has become such a huge hit as far as, watching on cable television and stuff like that. And Kevin Bacon himself, prior to the film's release, he felt this was a film that was the lowest point of his career. And he said in a quote in an interview, he says, "I actually broke down and fell to the sidewalk screaming to my pregnant wife. I can't believe I'm doing a movie about underground worms."
That's pretty much all it is.
Yeah. That's what it is. For those of you who don't know, it's a movie that they're in like this town of Perfection. That's where the perfection thing comes back to. There you go.
Okay.
Is there like a train going through your
Living room?
Or okay. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to make sure. Watch out for that. That might hurt.
The microphone is very sensitive.
It's very apparently. Sensitive. Sounds great. Wow. I can actually hear the people on there chewing their dinner. Anyway, it's in this town of Perfection, which has like 14 people in it, and it's like out in the desert, and suddenly they think there's earthquakes happening, and it's what it is these big underground worms that are just terrorizing the people and eating people and stuff like that. And it's freaking awesome. And basically half the movie takes place of these people stuck on a rock in the middle of the desert. Because if you can't go through a rock, but if you go on the dirt, the tremor worm can get you. So they're basically on there trying to figure out how to get off. And it's an awesome movie. It's fun. It's a fun movie. So...
It's one of the movies that I would never buy, but if it's on TV, I'll watch
it
every time.
And I'll watch it, and I won't stop. Wherever it's, I turn the channel and it's on, I'm going to watch it to the end from that point.
Yep.
It was a modest hit at the box office, apparently, but it definitely had the cult following over the years because of home video and television and apparently the internet, so people just watch it on stuff like that. But the writer was S.S. Wilson, and he actually said he got the idea for the film when he was working for the U.S. Navy. He was working in the California desert for the U.S. Navy. Not a lot of boats in the desert. I'm not sure what he was doing. But while resting on a rock, he imagined what it might be like if something underground kept him from getting off the rock. And that is the whole movie.
Do you think it's weird that he was in the Navy and his name is S.S. Wilson?
Yeah, that is kind of weird. Like,
okay.
Isn't that weird? Like, is that the boat named after him? He probably named that rock he was stuck on the S.S. Wilson because, again, not a lot of naval ships in the desert.
And then he was stuck with a volleyball that he drew a face on and also named it Wilson.
See, now you're going to make me cry.
See?
If you didn't shed a tear when Wilson got floated away, you have no heart. but, you know, they had some good reviews. One person from TV Guide wrote, "It's an affectionate throwback to the 1950s creature features," which it totally is. It's totally like a
weird, it totally is. Yeah.
And it reinvigorates the genre for that. And it was very well cast. Well, Kevin Bacon's a great actor. I like Kevin Bacon. And Fred Ward, people don't know the name, but if you looked him up, you're like, oh, he's in tons of stuff. And then it had Reba. Everyone loves Reba. And Michael Gross, and people don't realize, and once they see him, it's like, oh, it's the dad from Family Ties. So like,
it also had the kid from Wayne from The Wonder Years.
Oh yeah, there you go. So it actually had a lot of good people in the movie. There's not much to say about the movie. The whole thing was shot outside. I found this kind of cool. The whole thing was shot outside, except for there's only two interior sets. Walter's store, the guy who runs a little general store, that was shot on the studio. They built that. And then the basement for Bert and Heather, which is played by Michael Gross and Reba McEntire. And but the rest of it was all shot outside in the desert, the burning heat, you know. So it was pretty sweet. Yeah, I love the movie. It's a fun movie. Like you said, it comes on. I'm going to watch it. It doesn't disappoint. I think secretly if someone watches it, they're entertained. Like there's no one who's out there who's like, I hate that movie. I think everyone just is entertained by that movie.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, there you go. I don't really have much else on there, yeah, there you go. I'm not going to go watch these sequels. Okay, I'm just not going to do it.
No.
Yeah, it's just
no. I think that's also a common theme in cult classic movies is that there is a fan base and they still try to capitalize on that fan base and just make an absolute piece of trash as a sequel.
Right.
Sequels in general are usually not fantastic, but when you're taking such a small niche of a film targeted towards a very small audience, it's going to be an awful movie.
And then, you know, and it's direct to video and it's just never, yeah, they're not that good. So,
no.
Well, that's my five, Jim, my number five, Tremors. Love that movie.
Well done, sir.
Thank you.
My number five is a movie out of the year 2000 called Memento.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen Memento?
I have seen Memento.
Okay. It's kind of a film noir psychological thriller written and directed by a young Christopher Nolan.
Never heard of him.
Never. only movie ever did.
Right.
And starring Guy Pearce. The name of it, Memento, was named after a short story that Jonathan Nolan, his brother, wrote called Memento Mori, and it was published in Esquire magazine. And it became the basis for, obviously, Memento. No, Memento Mori is actually a Latin phrase that it means remember that you will die. So that's uplifting.
Okay. Yeah, that's nice.
So the whole basis, for anybody who hasn't seen the movie, I don't want to ruin any part of the movie for you, but Guy Pearce stars as a man who, as a past trauma, suffers from anterograde amnesia, meaning he has the inability to form new memories. he suffers from short-term memory loss after about 5 minutes. So to capitalize on that, he's searching for the person who attacked him and killed his wife. So he uses an intricate system of Polaroid pictures and tattoos to remember who people are and remember certain details about this big mystery of who the person is who killed his wife. Kind of, I mean, does that sound like a pretty good synopsis?
I think so, without giving it away. Yeah, because I don't think a lot of people have seen it, and you don't want to give it away. I suggest, it's a great movie. I suggest people see it. My film professor in college like talked about this movie all the time. Absolutely loved this movie, like his favorite movie. And so, like, it is a good movie. But yeah, it's not a huge success. Like, people like didn't, you don't know about it unless you hear from someone from like me or you and say, hey, you should watch this movie. That's how people get it. It's word of mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember watching this movie when I was younger. My parents had like Stars or something like that, and I watched it on one of those movie channels. I'd never heard of it, had no idea what I was watching, and I jumped into it about halfway through and had to turn it off after about 15 minutes. Like, first of all, you can't jump halfway into this movie, right? And it's too amazing to like sell it short. So I stopped watching it and caught it on the next go around. Back then there was no DVR, so I had to wait for the movie to be over and then catch it on the next channel that it was on to sit and watch the whole thing. I mean, it really is a fantastic movie. It's presented in two different sequences, and one series of videos in black and white that's shown chronologically, and then there's a series of colored video that's actually shown in reverse order.
Right.
Which is simulating awesome. Simulating for the audience the mental state of the character, and the two sequences kind of meet up at the end of the movie and make one complete storyline. And that sounds extremely confusing the way I'm presenting it, but Christopher Nolan did an amazing job storytelling this one. And if you haven't seen it, go watch it. And if you have seen it and it's probably been a decade, go watch it again. It's a great movie.
Right. Well, you mentioned Christopher Nolan. I mean, his other movies, if you like his movies, you're going to like this one. You know, yeah. So like, yeah, you go back and watch it. Well, good pick, Jim. Memento, The Fresh Maker. Good. I love those commercials. I love those commercials.
Mm-hmm. Tastes lovely.
Yes. Nice. Okay. Well, let's moving on. Number four of mine. Right? Yes. Well, here's one I hope you've seen. I really hope, and I hope everyone has seen. It's a delight. It came out in '84, but when I saw it, because I was only two in '84, it was always on Comedy Central and maybe TBS and stuff like that. And we actually had the videotape of this. And it stars Michael Keaton as Johnny Dangerously. And your silence means you have not seen it?
I've never seen it. Oh, man.
It's a great movie. It's a parody movie of like the 1930s like gangster movies.
Okay.
He plays Johnny Dangerously, who's a crook, you know, like a Al Capone type guy. He does a blatant like James Cagney impression through the whole movie. Like if you ever go back and you know, those movies. And so it's just, like I said, it's a parody, so it makes fun of a lot of those type of movies. And the synopsis of the film is, it stars Michael Keaton. He's an honest, good-hearted man who is forced to turn to a life of crime to finance his mother's skyrocketing medical bills and to put his younger brother through law school. And so then it just goes on that he becomes this the head of this crime syndicate in, I believe it takes place in Chicago. And it's just such a quotable, funny movie. It has Joe Piscopo in it, which is like the funniest ever seen Joe Piscopo. Danny DeVito, Mary Lou Henner, Maureen Stapleton, Peter Boyle, Dom DeLuise, Alan Hale Jr., which was the skipper from Gilligan's Island. It's an awesome movie. It's so much fun. It's loaded with like little gags and stuff, just like that they know they're in a movie kind of thing, you know, like it's that kind of a parody movie, like they know.
Okay.
Yeah, so they'll make some references to modern things, but it's pretty funny. You haven't seen it, so it's it's not that great. You should watch it. It's really funny. My wife actually loves this movie. This is one of the first things her and I actually bonded over when we started dating. And I don't know who brought it up. It might have been her, because I think she had the DVD. And I remember being at her house and like, oh, you like Johnny Dangerously? And it's like, I fell in love right there, you know. It's like, well, now I have to marry this girl. And she's like, she joked, because there's tons of lines in this movie. But there's one where Joe Piscopo, he plays the one of the bad guys. And he pulls out this gun. It's like a 66 Magnum or something he calls it. It's super long. It's ridiculous. And he just laughs and he goes, it shoots through schools. And it's like, which is not cool to say now. Not now I said it. But it's like, he's like, it's just a stupid line. It's just a stupid line. So the whole movie.
Shoots through schools.
Yeah, so yeah, which is really not good to say now if you think about it. Obviously, I should say that. But anyway, the rival gangster, his name is Maroney. And he plays a blatant racist version of it, what people would think Italian immigrant would be. Like, he can't understand what he says, and he you know, he's just like in those old crime movies. It was the same way. They had this like Italian gangster guy and you couldn't understand what he said, but he has really poor English, and so he says everything wrong, especially when he swears. Like, he will say, you farging ice hole, like, instead of, you know, and so it's like he says, and he calls people cork suckers, and so it's pretty funny. It's like I said, it would always be on like Comedy Central and stuff like that. Michael Keaton is awesome in that. I don't know if it was came right before his like Mr. Mom run, so he was like on a roll there, like Mr. 220, Mom.
221, whatever it takes.
Yeah. Right. So, I absolutely love this movie. And it got panned by critics because, it has sophomore humor. It's like, it's a parody movie. I mean, obviously, it's not going to do well, you know. And back then, parody movies didn't do what they do now with, like, a scary movie and those stupid things, you know. But,
yeah.
It's hilarious. Jim, I suggest you check it out.
I will. I'll see if it's on like Amazon or something. Oh.
Sorry. Joe Piscopo always tells Johnny Dangerously in the movie, he's like, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Like, so, like, one time Johnny punches him. And he goes, you shouldn't punch me, Johnny. My uncle punched me once. And he holds up his finger and he's like, once. And he says, and then, like, he gets shot or he gets hung on a hook. And he goes, you shouldn't hang me on a hook, Johnny. My mother hung me on a hook once. Once. And then the very end when he gets shot, he goes, you shouldn't shoot me, Johnny. My grandmother shot me once. Once. It's just so stupid. It just makes you laugh so hard. I don't know. Anyway, moving on.
Sorry, I haven't seen it. It's that 80s thing, man, that we talk about. There's a lot of 80s stuff.
It doesn't matter, though. I mean, you could still see these movies just because it's not the 80s.
Yeah, but I don't have I can go watch that movie and I probably will, but I don't have that like nostalgic love for that movie. Like, for somebody now, if somebody hasn't seen Adventures in Babysitting and went to watch it now, it's an entertaining movie. Or Labyrinth isn't now, it's probably not that great of a movie, but when you were a kid, it was awesome and you've got that like nostalgic feel for it.
Well, there you go. That's okay.
That's all I'm saying. You don't have to get mad at me.
I'm not mad. It's a great movie. If my buddy Zach is listening, he's gonna love the fact that I mentioned Johnny Dangerously. I'll just say that. He doesn't listen, so it doesn't matter. All right, moving on. What's your number four?
My number four is one of the movies that we talked about where I think it's a cult classic, and a lot of people do, but I guess you can make an argument that it's popular now than it used to be. 1992, Quentin Tarantino, Reservoir Dogs.
There you go. I think it's a cult classic, Jim.
I think it's a cult classic. I mean, I even saw Pulp Fiction listed on a lot of lists, which I would completely disagree with.
Yeah.
Reservoir Dogs is like, my analogy would be, it's Tarantino's Clerks, basically. It's his low budget. It's his first film. And then, you know, Mallrats would be more of his Pulp Fiction, I guess, if I'm going to relate Tarantino to Kevin Smith. But a lot of people have seen Reservoir Dogs. If you haven't seen Reservoir Dogs, it's a really great movie. It's a crime thriller about the events before and after a botched diamond heist with a group of career criminals, all named after colors, Mr. Brown, Mr. Pink, Mr. Orange, etc. The film was a feature full-length debut for writer and director Tarantino. Harvey Keitel, Steve Buscemi, Chris Penn, Tim Roth. Tim Roth has been in a lot of Tarantino stuff after this movie. And it started a lot of themes that Tarantino would use in a lot of his movies, pop culture, a lot of profanity, nonlinear storytelling, a lot of almost like the crime version of Seinfeld conversations.
Right.
Just normal conversations. Like in this one, the movie starts with them.
I was just going to say the start of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. It starts the movie eating breakfast before their diamond heist. And they get into a whole conversation about Madonna's Like a Virgin, and then whether or not they should tip and how much they should tip. And it's just this long drawn out argument before they go rob a diamond store.
Right.
It's really funny. So Tarantino had, and this may be common knowledge, I don't know. He was working at a video store. And a lot of people have heard that. He was working at Video Archives in Manhattan Beach. And he planned to shoot this movie with his friends on a budget of $30,000 on a 16mm black and white film. And the producer was Lawrence Bender. And he ended up playing a cop in the movie, and Tarantino played Mr. Brown. Bender gave the script to his acting teacher, whose wife gave the script to Harvey Keitel. Keitel liked it enough to sign on as a co-producer, and they raised a lot more money, up to $1.5 million, with his name being attached to it.
Crazy. $30,000 to $1.5 million.
Yep. That's nuts. Because of Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
And then Keitel also paid for casting sessions in New York, where they casted Buscemi and Michael Madsen and Tim Roth. Without Keitel, the movie would have been virtually unseen. Now the decision to not show the jewelry heist itself, Tarantino said that to cut that whole thing out was originally because of the budget. They just didn't have enough money to do it, but he always liked the idea of not showing it and stuck with the idea, to make the details about the movie, not about the diamond heist, but more character driven in the before and the after effects.
Right.
Which I thought, it was really my favorite part of the whole storyline, is you don't see that. The title for the movie, Reservoir Dogs, I thought was really funny. It came from a customer who came into the video store requesting to see Louis Malle's 1987 film Au Revoir Les Enfants. You want to make a Home Alone joke?
You're what the French call les incompetents.
Les incompetents. So he mispronounced the title Les Enfants and he mispronounced it. Instead of the children, he said essentially Reservoir Dogs.
Nice.
So he stole that and called the movie that. Other characters' names, which I always liked, was Nice Guy Eddie. I always thought that was an awesome name. Cool. For a character. And then the huge selling point of this movie to me was also the soundtrack. If you ever had the soundtrack, it has kind of cut scenes in between all the songs with the DJ talking, and it's Stephen Wright, the comedian. He's known for like a very deadpan, dry delivery in between songs like Hooked on a Feeling and Stuck in the Middle with You. It's really great. And you put the lime in the coconut, some really good songs thrown in there too. So Reservoir Dogs, I grew up like you, loving movies and just collecting DVDs and stuff. And another analogy for you, like Reservoir Dogs was like my Nirvana's Nevermind. It was like the movie I watched that blew all the doors open, and really led to me really appreciating cinema and studying more cinema. And I love, a lot of people don't like Tarantino, and that's fine, but I will watch anything and everything that he does, writes, directs, anything. I really like Tarantino, so and this is one of my favorite things he's ever done.
I love this movie. This is one I ran out to Best Buy and bought, because it's a great movie. And the soundtrack, without giving away a lot, there's a scene with the song Stuck in the Middle with You. It was an incredible scene, and it's not easy to watch for some people, you know, but it's a great scene. And Tarantino himself, you're right, so a lot of people don't like him. And I honestly think people don't like him because he's different. He acts different. Mm-hmm. And he always puts himself in movies. People are like, oh, he puts himself in movies. Well, it's because he had to in the beginning. You know, he had, because he couldn't, like you said, he started with 30,000 in this movie. He's like, and he had to. So, like, it's kind of a theme now. And a lot of his movies can run together a little bit, you know. And he's a genius. The guy's a genius. His movies.
He really is.
They may be really violent in some aspects, and a lot of swearing and stuff, which turns people off. But if you break down the core of these movies, he is a genius. He's really good at these making movies.
Yeah.
He's one of the best directors out there, I think.
I totally agree with you. And he's teamed up with Robert Rodriguez on a lot of things. And Tarantino directed a scene in Sin City. There was a really great scene in that movie. And just the one scene, because Rodriguez did the rest of the movie. And they teamed up on the Grindhouse double feature with Death Proof and Planet Terror, which a lot of people don't get and a lot of people didn't like. But I love that 70s Grindhouse, mm-hmm. really cheesy B horror movies and stuff. I love those movies, and these nailed it to a T.
Yeah. Good. Reservoir Dogs. Good pick, Jim. That's a good pick.
Thank you.
All right. Well, my number three, you mentioned Grindhouse, and I believe Kurt Russell's in Grindhouse, isn't he?
He is or in is
not that
Death.
One.
Yeah, he's in Death Proof.
Death
he's
Proof.
In that one. Yeah.
Well, he is also in my number three cult classic, and I think you know what it is, Jim.
Yes, I do.
It is Big Trouble in Little China. I love this movie. I know you're not a fan already, but I don't care.
I'm not a
fan. You'll have your turn. Big Trouble in Little China, 86, came out in 86, directed by John Carpenter, who I love John Carpenter. This is the fourth of five movies he did with Kurt Russell. They love each other, which is cool.
Besides, they did what?
They did The Thing, Escape from New York, Escape from L.A.,
okay.
And what was the other one? Shoot, I have it down here somewhere, but... Elvis, 1979 Elvis movie.
Oh, okay.
Which I've never seen. So, but anyway, so it also stars Kim Cattrall of Sex and the City fame, and then mm-hmm. Dennis Dunn and James Hong, which are names you might not remember, might not recognize, but in any movie where there's, you know, Japanese people, these guys are in it. They're like two of the biggest Japanese, American Japanese actors out there. So, anyway, the story tells of Jack Burton, played by Kurt Russell, who helps his friend Wang Chi rescue Wang's girlfriend. Or fiance, and it basically gets them involved in this underground, mysterious underworld beneath Chinatown in San Francisco, and it just goes crazy from there. It's a fantasy, almost like a fantasy type movie, but it's also a martial arts movie, and it's an action flick. It's just like a lot of things. And the reason people either never seen it, but I think a lot of people know of it now, but like have never seen it, like the. One of the best things about it, when I bought the DVD, it was like a special edition. It had you know what they would do? That director and actor would voice the when they'd watch the movie, and you could listen to their track of them watching and talking about the movie. Mm-hmm. John Carpenter, Kurt Russell did it, and one of the best audio commentaries I've ever heard. Like it's just they're so real about everything. But they said they think the reason a lot of this didn't do well is because. Studios didn't know how to promote it. They didn't know how to talk about it. Like, how are we supposed to promote this movie? We have no idea how we're gonna get it across. Just like I'm having trouble trying to explain what this movie is. They put no money into advertising, and it just was a huge, huge flop. Absolutely huge flop in the theater. But it became such a huge hit with home video and on TV and stuff. But anyway, so. If you haven't seen the movie, I suggest you watch it. But it's an awesome thing. But this movie actually, because Carpenter's distaste for everyone who didn't help with the movie, that as far as a major studio that released it, he vowed to never work with a major studio again. Like he was like, "That's
really?
It, I'm done." Yeah, I don't know if he actually came back in some of his movies and did work with a major studio, but he didn't for a while after this. The studio that did it, I think it's MGM actually who. Released it, but they hired Carpenter and they made him rush the movie already because another studio was really going to release The Golden Child with Eddie Murphy at the same time. And they're like, he even made the comment, he's like, so there's been no like modern martial arts fantasy movies about having Japanese a lot of Japanese stars, but suddenly there's two, and you're right. So now you want me to rush this movie, which is already going to be hard to explain. And so, like, he was already, he was doomed from the beginning on that one. So yeah, they did rush it, and it came out four or five months before Eddie Murphy's The Golden Child, which also didn't do that great in the theater. But Carpenter always wanted to do a martial arts movie, so this kind of fulfilled that desire. It grossed only, like I said, like $11 million, and the budget was $25 million. So it was a huge flop. Like, it didn't make its money back at all until years later. It became a cult classic because of the steady audience of home video. That's the first time I saw it. My dad, I think we had Showtime growing up, and my dad watched it, and I watched it with him. I'm like, this is great! You know, like, it was so cool! There's these guys, there's these three bad guys. They're called Lightning, Thunder, and Rain. Speaking of those guys, and so they do really cool things, especially the guy with lightning. He has lightning shooting out of his hands. Well, he was inspiration later on for Mortal Kombat for Lord Raiden, the character in Mortal Kombat. Dressed exactly the same type of hat and everything. So that's pretty cool. And another thing it screwed it for the opening, for the weekend it came out. It came out a couple weeks prior to James Cameron's Aliens, which was kind of a big movie. And so they're like, people are going to go see that instead of your movie about, Chinatown that no one understood what was going on. But if you watch the movie, you understand what's going on. And one of my favorite part of the movie is because, Jim, obviously, you know, and people listening, I love Kurt Russell. You know that. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. My favorite part of the movie is that you think the white guy is going to be the big hero, and he saves the day. You think that. But the whole movie, he's playing like three steps behind everyone else.
Yeah.
And which is cool. He's a bumbling idiot. And he tries to be cool. He tries to be like this tough-talking American truck driver guy. And he's really behind everyone else. And that makes it funny. Like, so he's not the hero. The other guys are the hero. His buddies are the hero. Heroes. And so I love that. I think that's cool. And then there's not many movies like that anymore. I mean, they just made a movie about the Great Wall of China, and isn't Matt Damon the star of that movie? You know, it's like, okay, really?
Man, a white guy had to take care of it?
Yeah.
That had to be a contractually obligated movie. Like, there's no way he would choose to do that movie.
No, probably not. That's one of the reasons I love this movie. But it got panned by critics, of course, and one of the guys said, he does a great John Wayne imitation, speaking of Kurt Russell, and, he's mimicking a bunch of heroes, but never finding his own character in the movie, which I disagree. He's Jack frickin' Burton. That's the character, and he's awesome at it. His truck is called the Pork Chop Express. Which I have a shirt called the Pork Chop Express, and that's what he delivers. He delivers pigs. And so that's what, but I love that Pork Chop Express. And I have that shirt, and it's great. Some of my favorite things. Empire Magazine, I should say, actually came out because it was like a complete failure. And Empire Magazine came out, I think it is, a couple years ago, with a list of 500 greatest movies of all time, and Big Trouble Little China is on the list. Like, it became such a hit after, and like, people who now watch it, for the most part, besides you, love it, you know. So Jim, you like this. Last February 2015, Funko released a line of the Pop vinyl figures. I know you like those. You sent me Saved by the Bell ones, I think. You sent me some pictures of those. So they have Jack Burton and all the other guys from
love
that
those
movie.
Things.
Yeah. They're making a board game coming out this year of Big Trouble Little China. I have no idea what's going to be involved in that, but it's going to be a board game. And there's a card game, apparently, for this, which I've never seen, but just came out this last August. And it features the original artwork based on the characters from the movie. So I kind of like to just see it because the artwork actually is awesome. I do like a lot of Chinese art and stuff. So that's another reason I like this, because it's all in Chinatown and stuff. And let's see here. And I also mentioned the guy who plays the Lightning was inspiration for Raiden in Mortal Kombat. And then the guy who plays Lo Pan, the big bad guy,
Liu Kang.
No, it was inspiration for Shang Tsung, the emperor in Mortal Kombat, because he can morph into other people and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I would probably know that if I watched the movie in its entirety.
It's a great movie, man. It's very quotable, too. It's all in the reflexes. That's what he'd always... That's what Jack Burton always says when something happens. That's all in the reflexes. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the cartoon that was, I don't know if it's still on, but it was out a couple years ago when they re-released a cartoon for it. I believe Nickelodeon did it. The 23rd episode of the second season actually has a story called A Chinatown Ghost Story, and it's basically this movie. They just inserted their stuff, and it made a Big Trouble in Little China movie, but in their cartoon. So it's, I have to check that out. And actually the guy, James Hong, came back and actually voiced the bad guy character. Instead of Lo Pan, it was Ho Chan. So they really just stole the whole movie for that episode. They're talking about a remake, and I hate that. And they're talking about The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson being in it, because he's in everything now. And I that's still in the works. I hope it doesn't happen. I don't mind them doing these remakes and stuff, but I could just not care and not see it because I like the movie I like, but they always want to remake things now. Here's one for you, though. Here's some cool trivia. Zach Braff, you're one of your favorites, mm-hmm. went as Jack Burton to Kate Hudson's 2014 Halloween party.
Okay.
And Kate Hudson's...
Goldie Hawn's daughter,
and Goldie Hawn is married to Kurt Russell. And he actually ran into Kurt Russell at it. He was at the party, and it startled him at first, but they actually posed for a picture together, which I could not find online, but that was apparently they have that picture of those two. That'd been awesome. So that's it. Like I said, there's everything's in it, man. There's magic, there's a crazy monster, there's a weird wedding in it. It's got everything. It's got everything, Jim.
Well, it's definitely a cult movie for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Are we still friends? So good job. Are we still friends at this point? Okay.
Yeah, I just can never get into the movie. I've tried to watch it several times, and I get about halfway through, and I'm like, I could be doing so many other things. I just don't care about.
You know
this
what you
movie.
Could be doing? You could be sitting down and watching the movie and enjoying a classic. Sorry, getting upset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a, we don't have to like everything.
I know.
We can have separate parts of our lives. It's how we grow.
No, you are my life, Jim.
You're smothering me.
Oh, smother. All right. Well, let's move on. What's your number three?
My number three is a little film from 1999 called The Boondock Saints.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Thank you. It is written and directed by Troy Duffy. And stars Sean Patrick Flannery and Norman Reedus, who we all know from The Walking Dead at this point. I don't think he's cut his hair since
right.
The Boondock Saints.
No.
The
ladies love
him. If you haven't seen this movie, they also love Cool J.
Well, so do I. Anyway, go ahead.
I watch this movie every St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
It's my tradition.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, it's these two brothers who kind of just have divine intervention. They kind of take it upon themselves to rid the world of evil, I guess is the way you would say it, but they really don't know what they're doing. So, and the movie is kind of disjointed. So Willem Dafoe plays an FBI agent who's trying to figure out really what's going on. And it'll start up a scene with these two. Well, I guess it starts up the scene with the FBI agent investigating what happened, and then it'll backtrack with these two going after mob bosses or a kind of a peep show place or in different areas committing this big murder, and then the FBI agent's trying to figure out what's going on, and it's all like out of sequence and stuff, but it's just a really cool movie, and the theme behind it is it okay to commit a crime if you're committing a crime against somebody who's also committing a crime? Is it okay to kill someone who's murdering other people? Some people would say it's vigilante justice. Other people say they're still murderers. So this kind of the overall theme of the movie. Is that okay? Is it not okay? Troy Duffy was working as a bartender in LA, and kind of came up with this idea by watching things happen. He watched a drug dealer steal money off of a dead body, things like that, where he's like, I mean, you're just horrible, immoral things, really. Is it okay to stop, to kill someone who's doing these things? Is it not okay? Probably not okay, but that's whatever. Initially regarded as one of the hottest scripts in Hollywood at the time, the movie had trouble getting into production and was finally given a limited theatrical release of only 5 theaters for 1 week due to the Columbine High School massacre. Bad timing. I have another movie that also has bad timing on my list coming up pretty soon. It was met with poor critical reviews. However, the film ultimately grossed $50 million in domestic video sales and developed a large cult following. The movie was followed by a 2009 sequel called All Saints Day and a second sequel, a third movie, as you would probably call it, is currently in development.
Have you seen the sequel, Jim?
I have once.
I have not seen it. Again, you know, when you do sequels to these movies, they tend not to be the best. What did you think?
I did not like it as much. That's why I've only seen it once in 8 years. It was, I needed to see it, but it's not the Boondock Saints. And at least Troy Duffy did both movies, but I love the Boondock Saints. It's a movie that I didn't even know existed until I went to college. And it's one that we, along with the next two on my list, movies that we just used to watch in the dorms all the time.
Nice. And this is definitely a St. Patrick's Day movie.
For sure. I mean, it takes place in Boston.
Right.
They're Irish. They're Irish Catholic in a Boston neighborhood. It's very St. Patrick. And the first crime happens on St. Patrick's Day with the Russian mob.
Right. Yeah. That's a good movie. I love that movie. I left that one off my list, and I didn't want to. I love the movie, but that was one I left off. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I gotta leave something off. So, but the way you made me feel about Johnny Dangerously, maybe I should have put it on. Just kidding. No, you didn't see that one. I should have said the way you made
me
feel about.
It.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be mean. Well, real quick,
I knew it was on your list, and I knew you love Kurt Russell. It's not a surprise.
I love Kurt Russell. I have to go back real quick, and I mentioned, I feel bad, because I mentioned a couple times earlier when I was talking about Big Trouble in Little China, I mentioned that there's Japanese Americans in it. It's about Chinese and Chinese Americans. I'm sorry. I just want to be in trouble here.
Yeah, way to be an American.
I'm not an asshole. I'm really not an asshole.
They did not care about foreign relations.
No, I do. I care more than some people. Anyway, I just had to go back on that. Okay, sorry. Anyway, anything else on Boondock Saints? I love this movie.
No, that's pretty much all I have on Boondock Saints, but it's one of my favorite movies, and I watch it at least once a year, like I said, on St. Patrick's Day, usually drinking a Guinness or a Black and Tan or something like that.
It gets you pumped for St. Patrick's Day, really. So
it really does, yeah. Good. I love it.
All right, well, number two, Jim. I mean, I'd be surprised. I hope you've seen it. I'd be surprised if it's on your list. This movie came out in 1985, but again, it's not because it's an 80s movie that I loved it. It's a period movie, but it would always be, I had it on videotape, and it'd always be on, you know, Comedy Central and stuff like that. And that is the movie Clue, based on the board game.
Oh, Clue. Man, I can't. I love that movie, and it didn't never even occur to me to put that on my list. Oh. It was one that was totally off my radar, but damn, Tom, that is a great pick.
Thank you so much. It was very hard not to put this at my number one, actually, but I watched it again last night. I love this movie. I watch it a lot. I love the, first of all, let me go back. I love the board game Clue, and no one ever wants to play with me. So, Jim, when you come visit, we got to play Clue.
We will play Clue.
We'll have game nights and stuff. We'll have people over, and I'll go downstairs to get all the games. Like, my wife will be like, hey, go down and grab the games. Oh, okay. I'll grab it. I always put Clue on the top. And I come walking up, and I don't say anything. My wife knows because she gives me that look, but I don't say anything. And no one ever picks, hey, let's play Clue, you know. But I'm trying. Anyway, so Clue is an awesome game. But based on the board game, first ever movie based on a board game, which is cool. It stars Tim Curry, the big name, one of the b- big, huge name in it, but it also has Christopher Lloyd, Aileen Brennan, Madeline Kahn, Michael McKean, Martin Mull, and Leslie Ann Warren. I mean, those are all big names. This movie was a complete flop in the theaters. And I'll tell you why, a couple things, but it actually had a budget of $15 million, and it made $14,643,997. So just shy of its budget. just almost. But again, it had a huge cult following. And one of the big things that people, that became a flop, is the movie has three endings. Now, I grew up, I had the videotape, and I would watch it, and on the videotape, the home video release, it played all three endings. It played one after another. And so, like, you got all three, which is, it's really cool. So that's how I grew up watching it. I didn't know that when they released it in theaters, they would put a different ending in each theater. Like, so no one ever saw the all three at once until later on.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they thought it was a really cool idea, and it was a cool concept, because actually, the concept was developed by John Landis, who did like Animal House and a bunch of those movies. And he said they hired three different writers to write the three different endings. They actually had a fourth ending, so they had four writers. And they never talked to each other. They didn't know anything about what the other was going to write. So that's how they came up with the three endings. Like, this is how it could happen. And it just flopped. People didn't want to go to the theater and go, well, I want to know what else happens, and like, I don't want to pay another entry to get into a theater to see what else happens. So that's kind of why it flopped. And I think eventually later on in its run, they started showing all three endings in the theater, but by then it was already a flop, so it didn't matter. The fourth ending was actually filmed, and it's never been seen. But they removed it because it just wasn't good. The director said, and he says, quote, it really wasn't very good. I looked at it and I thought, no, 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 we've got to get rid of this. I thought that was a great quote. Just no, no. And I actually feel that it's Wadsworth, who is played by Tim Curry. The fourth ending is where he commits all the murders. And I could say, if no one's seen it, I could say this ending, because no one's going to see this ending. So he commits all the murders, and then he later on gets killed. And they thought it was just too dark. Like, he later on gets killed by there's a pack of dogs in the movie. And, like, so it just was too dark of an ending. So that's why they just said, get rid of it. So Carrie Fisher was actually cast and going to play Miss Scarlet in the movie. And Carrie Fisher, rest in peace. She actually had to withdraw 4 days prior to filming because she entered drug and alcohol addiction back then in the 80s that she went to. And hey, she did kick that habit and everything. She had lived a great life after that. So the color of each person's car in the beginning of the movie, everyone shows up to the mansion at night. And if you notice, the color of each person's car is the color of their board game piece in the game. So Green's car is green. Miss Peacock's car is blue, and so on. So that's kind of cool, because in the movie they don't represent the game pieces at all. They don't wear the certain colors or anything like that. So I thought that was kind of cool. Obviously, the film got mixed reviews. Critics didn't understand it. They said the only part of the film that is remotely engaging, it says there's only one part that's remotely engaging, but after that part happens, it just begins to drag. So I didn't even say what part it is. So it's kind of weird, but they didn't like it, but had a great cast. The cast all signed on immediately. They thought it was a great script and a fun movie. I mean, fun. What's more fun than a murder mystery type movie,
Yeah.
And so, of course there's talk about a remake, and we'll see what happens there. I just don't like those when they remake this stuff. I had a cult following. And do you ever see the show Psych, Jim?
Yeah, I have seen it.
Okay, there's an episode called 100 Clues, and which actually features Clue stars Martin Mull, Christopher Lloyd, and Leslie Ann Warren. And the episode's dedicated to the late, great Madeline Kahn, who played Mrs. White in the movie. But the episode has many jokes and themes that pay homage to the film, but it actually includes multiple endings. of the that episode. And so like just so that's kind of cool. The floor, if you when they do an overhead shot when they're in the hall, the floor actually portrays the board game, the parquet floor, and so you can actually look like the board game. Tim Curry, who plays Wadsworth, he actually voices the rules of the game that you would in the game Clue. He just says after they find the guy Mr. Body dead, Wadsworth is yelling, "Hey, that's what we're trying to find out. We're trying to find out who killed him and where with what." And that's exactly what the rules of the game are. This is funny. You remember the movie, right? You said you've seen it, right?
Oh yeah.
So the guy who plays Mr. Body was very unknown like at the time as an actor because he's not an actor. He was actually the front man of a rock band called Fear at the time, a punk rock band. And he was chosen because his name is Lee Ving. And they chose him basically because he's playing Mr. Body. And so they could say Mr. Body will be Lee Ving soon. They basically picked him just so they could say this guy's going to get killed. He's leaving.
That's really funny.
That is funny. He did a good job. I didn't know he wasn't an actor. He didn't have a lot of lines. He gets to play a dead guy for the most part, which is great. The secret passages that they take in the movie are they lead to the same rooms they do on the board game, which is pretty cool. So when they go in through the kitchen secret passage, they get to the to the study, and then when they go through the conservatory, they get to the lounge, just like in the game. So, but I love this. I remember seeing it as a little kid. And I just fell in love with it. I like murder mystery type shows and movies and stuff anyway, and stuff with the twist ending. And every time I watch it, Jim, I have to go back. Every time I watch it, I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, who's not in the room now at this part? Who's over there killing this person? And every time, and 30 years later of watching it, I'm still like, okay, who is doing that? Okay, and I still love it. I'm entertained by it all the time. I love when they split up into groups and they're running around and they're trying to split from each other because someone might be trying to go kill so and so or whatever. And it's just a fun, really fun movie, and it's got great comedy in it. And it's great.
That's a great pick. That's one of my favorite comedy movies. And like you, I like murder mystery things too. And it's just such a funny movie. I love the ongoing gag that somebody stepped in dog poop.
Yeah.
it's so funny. It's just such a great movie. Tim Curry is hilarious in it. And that's a great pick, Tom. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. I'm probably going to rewatch it again tonight because I fell asleep watching it last night. So I'm probably just going to pop it in again. Well, good. Well, what's your number two, Jim?
My number two is Donnie Darko.
Ah, I knew this was coming.
Donnie Darko. You mentioned Empire Magazine.
Yeah.
They did a list of the 50 greatest independent films of all time. This was number two after Reservoir Dogs, number one.
There you go.
Yeah. I love this movie. This was another one that I watched in college a lot. It was The Boondock Saints and Donnie Darko, and then What Will Be My Number One. Those were like our dorm movies. So this was filmed, I thought, some really cool facts on this one. It was filmed over the course of 28 days. Coincidentally, that's the time that passes in the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Because, I thought that was kind of cool. Because when Donnie Darko meets Frank, the 6-foot-tall bunny rabbit, for anybody who hasn't seen this movie, I'll give you a quick synopsis, but it's very messed up and it's really hard to follow. And I've seen it dozens of times and I'm not even quite sure I really fully understand everything that happens in it or that you're even supposed to, or that it even is supposed to remotely make sense. I don't know, but I love the movie. And when he meets Frank, Frank tells him that the world will end in 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes and 12 seconds. So they shot it. Didn't mean to shoot over the span of 28 days. It just happened that way. The film was almost a straight-to-video release. Right. It was screened at Sundance in 2001 before receiving a limited theatrical release in October of 2001. And due to the film's advertising, it featured a plane crashing, and September 11th attacks happened a month before.
Whoops.
again, Columbine affected a movie. Obviously, September 11th affected this movie and the advertising in it. In the end, it grossed just under $7.3 million on a budget of $4.5 million. Mm-hmm. And the only reason it got any sort of release was because of Drew Barrymore, who's in the movie. She plays the teacher in the movie, and her production company was called Flower Films, and she decided to put it out under her own production house. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been distributed at all. So the movie's about a troubled teen living in suburban Virginia. He's awakened at the beginning and led outside by a figure in a monstrous rabbit costume named Frank, who introduces or who tells him that the world's going to end. I told you the timeline there. When he wakes up, he goes home and he finds a jet engine had crashed into his room. And his older sister, Elizabeth, tells him that the FAA doesn't know where it came from. And it just kind of sets that ominous tone of the movie. And the whole movie is trying to get through the 28 days and figure out if the world's going to end. You know, he's almost living on borrowed time because he should have died if he wouldn't have fallen asleep, I think, on a golf course. He would have been in his room. The jet engine landed on him. So it's just a very mysterious movie, and you've got this bunny rabbit who shows up, and Donnie's really supposed to be on pretty much antipsychotic medication throughout it. It's a very twisted film, but Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. I checked to see where on his timeline this was for his movies. It was one of his first movies, but not the first movie.
Oh, the I know the first.
Go ahead. What is it, Tom?
City Slickers.
City Slickers.
That's right.
First movie. Maggie Gyllenhaal, his sister, is in this one, plays the sister. Jenna Malone, Patrick Swayze, Drew Barrymore, Noah Wyle, Seth Rogen, Ashley Tisdale. It's a very long list of people in this movie, but and a lot of them weren't anything. Seth Rogen wasn't anything when this movie
was made. No, I forgot he was in the movie.
Yeah, he plays one of the bullies.
Yeah, forgot about that.
Yeah. So it's if you haven't seen it, just give it a watch. Then they made a sequel called S. Darko in 2009. And the creator of Donnie Darko said, quote, "I had nothing to do with it. I hate it when people try to blame me or hold me responsible for it because I had no involvement. I don't control the underlying rights to Donnie Darko franchise. I had to relinquish them when I was 24 years old. I hate when people ask me about it because I've never seen it and I never will. So don't ask me about it."
So he's still on the fence.
Yeah, it just wait for him to watch it. Maybe he'll like it after he sees
it. He's on the fence,
Okay. Vince Vaughn almost played Donnie.
Wow.
But he was 31 at the time, and Donnie Darko is 16, so he turned down the role. And Mark Wahlberg also could have played him, but he wanted to play the character with a lisp, and they decided not to go that route.
Would you say Donnie or Mark?
Mark.
What an asshole.
Yeah,
I hate that guy. Sorry, him and Charlton Heston can go straight to hell.
I mean, that's pretty much what I have.
Yeah.
On Donnie Darko, I mean, it's a twisted movie, and I can't really explain a lot of it. Partially because I don't understand it all, but also because you really just need to watch the movie and take it all in.
Right.
And if you have seen it, my favorite quote in the movie, and I still say it. And because this isn't a widely seen movie, nobody ever has any clue what I'm talking about. But there's a scene in it. There's a character named Grandma Death. And it's this old woman who just walks back and forth between her house and her mailbox. And you find out why later on that this is all she does. And they're kind of the boys are commentating, watching her from a distance, like, "Oh, is there going to be mail? Is there mail in the box? Oh, no dice, Grandma." And I always say, "No dice, Grandma." And clearly nobody has ever any idea what I'm talking about, but I'm used to people not having an idea what I'm talking about. So they just kind of like let it go. Like, it's just something stupid Jim said again. And they just keep moving on with their lives. So that's one of the lines I always say from that movie is "No dice, Grandma."
Nice. Yeah, this is a good movie. I've only seen it a couple times. My wife loved this movie. This would be her number one. She absolutely loves this movie. And I know a lot of people, when they see it, they love it. I'm on the fence on this one just because maybe I wasn't in the right mood. I don't dislike it. I do like it. It's just not one that I see. We have it. We own it. And I'm actually looking at it right now because I'm looking at all my movies. And it's just not one movie. It's there, and I always pass over it. I always pick something else. And I don't know why. I need to watch it again. But you're right. The more you watch it, you still don't know everything about the movie. You know, so, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing to keep you guessing as you watch it again. But yeah, it's a good movie, Jim. I like it. And I would say, I mean, I don't know if City Slickers put Jake Gyllenhaal on the map, but I think this movie did get him some better roles down the line because it was maybe panned by critics and bad timing, but his acting is really good in it, and he went on, obviously, yeah. He's gone on to be a great actor, so good.
And I think for me it was more where I was in my life when I saw this movie. If this movie came out today and watched it, I'd be like, it's messed up.
Yeah.
But for me it was like living in the dorm and watching it with a bunch of friends and just having a great time watching this crazy movie. It was great. It was awesome.
I would think some substances would help enjoy the movie. Maybe the first round of watching
apple juice. Yeah. Apple juice, probably.
We'll go with apple juice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a good one. I like that. Good pick, Jim. I like it. I thought that one would be on your list, and so I that's the only one I've guessed so far of your list here. So there you go. There you go.
All right.
Well, before we get to our number ones, what are some that you left off your list? We already talked a little bit about Office Space and Dazed and Confused, and we have our reasons for those.
Yeah. And we talked about, I think we mentioned Clerks.
Yeah.
I do love Clerks, and I would say that that's a cult classic movie.
Yeah.
One of them that we haven't talked about that almost made my list is Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh, see, I've never seen that. I know a lot of people like that movie. I need to see that one.
Yeah, I like Guy Ritchie movies a lot. Rock and Rolla, I probably liked better than Lock, Stock, but those were good. And then we talked about the rest of them on my list just in normal conversation.
Yeah, Clerks was another one that it was really close to making my list, and it just kept falling down. And I love the movie. I absolutely love it. I don't know if I like it as much now as when I first saw it, but I still like it. But it's like you said with Donnie Darko, like now if you watch it, you're like, okay. Because it did definitely, not that it hasn't aged well. I don't know how to say it, but I love the movie, but it just wasn't, it wouldn't be my first choice. I'd go with Mallrats or Chasing Amy over.
Oh, yeah.
Or Clerks, I mean, you know, if I'm going to pick a Kevin Smith movie day, you know. But
yeah, I mean, we're talking about, I mentioned like Dazed and Confused is my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah.
Mallrats is in my top five of favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
I love the smell of commerce in the morning. So some of mine I left off. Swingers. I love that movie. Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I left off.
Oh yeah.
Love that movie. This is Spinal Tap. I mentioned Clerks, Mallrats. There's one I'm not even going to mention because it is going to come up when we do our list of our summertime movies that that are summertime related. Maximum Overdrive. Remember that movie?
Yes, I do.
Based on the short story Trucks by Stephen King. Not a good movie, but I loved it as a little kid. Masters of the Universe with the He-Man movie. Better Off
Dolph
Dead.
Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, Better Off Dead with John Cusack from the 80s. It's really They Live, which starred Rowdy Roddy Piper from the WWE.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a good movie about aliens. And the one I left off the list, I don't know if we're on the air yet or not, but I mentioned that it technically became a success. It was a success, and I didn't realize because I thought this is a total cult movie, and I love the movie. It was The Lost Boys, and I don't know if this is your number one.
Oh yeah.
Okay, it's not your number one. Good. I thought I just stole your thunder. But I'm doing research on it, and the thing was voted the best horror movie of 1987. It made a bunch of money. It had NXS. The band NXS had like three songs, hit songs in it. So it's like it wasn't a bad. Like it was a success. And had a huge cast, and so like
that's weird.
It's a great movie, and it has been followed up by horrible sequels, you know, like straight to video. And it was the first movie with the Coreys, you know, and you know the Corey Haim and Corey Feldman, and so like, but it's not. I don't consider it a cult classic. I mean, it's a good movie. It's a successful big movie. So,
interesting.
And it's definitely one of my favorite movies. As far as for that genre of scary movies or horror movies or whatever. I love Lost Boys. So
where is what's the town in California where it's set?
They filmed in Santa Barbara area or whatever. Not, or maybe it's Santa Barbara, but it's Santa Clara.
Santa Clara
is where it's it's supposed to be or whatever.
What's the grandfather say, like something about Santa Clara and it's all these damn vampires?
The bad thing about Santa Clara is always these damn vampires. Like he knows the whole time. It's just weird. But I love that movie. But let's go to our number ones, Jim.
Let's do it.
All right, my number one, and it's considered a success, I guess, but it's definitely not the biggest one that people know of this person's movies. And it's one of the – it's in my top five favorite movies of all time. It might be my number one favorite movie of all time, and it's 1985 comedy Fletch.
I wondered if you're going to put that down.
People, you know, Chevy Chase, when people think of Chevy Chase, they think the vacation movies and they think Caddyshack. Not everyone has seen Fletch. And for those of you who don't know out there, my son is named Fletch. I named my son after this movie. I tricked my wife into it. I said, "What do you think of the name Fletcher?" "Oh, I love that." And I'm like, "Yes, I can call him Fletch." and by the way, our next kid, if we have a boy, it will be named Clark. After Clark was born. But that's neither here nor there. We're not talking about that right now. But anyway, this is a great movie. And for those of you who don't know, and this has gained a huge cult following because of the way it's quotable, just like a Caddyshack and Vacation. But Chevy Chase made a lot of shitty movies in the 80s. Like a lot of bad movies. If you've seen Funny Farm, it has its moments. Like some of these movies have its moments. But wasn't the Vacation movies and Caddyshack are like the big ones everyone knows. No one really knows about it. And like, so when Fletch came out, it wasn't a huge success because people were like, he doesn't make good movies. You know, like, so no one was going to see it. But again, this is one that came out like in 80, it came out in 85. I saw it again. We had it on videotape and my brothers had it. And that's how I fell in love with it. But the film revolves around the Los Angeles Times reporter played by Chevy Chase. His name's Irwin M. Fletcher, goes by Fletch. He's offered a large sum of money to kill a millionaire with terminal cancer. And then Fletch becomes, because he's an investigative reporter, becomes suspicious, and then he starts digging into it, and he discovers the guy's not ill at all, and they're just trying to set him up. And so he just kind of unravels this, what's going on to this mystery. And it's actually a really cool story. It is a cool murder-type mystery movie. And it's so quotable. It's so funny. It's based on books in the 60s, 70s that revolved a guy... named Fletch, who was a reporter, and they made a bunch of books about it. And so that's where the movie got made in the 80s. They've been trying to make it since the 70s, but they finally got made with Chevy Chase as the guy. Chevy Chase himself has said, "This is my best movie. This is the best time." He's like, "I actually got to be myself." Which is weird, because it seems like he's himself on every movie, but he says this is his favorite movie. There was a sequel called Fletch Lives, which is a good movie. There's also one of the books was Fletch Lives, so it was a direct sequel from the book. And a prequel called Fletch One, W-O-N, has been in development for like 2 decades. Kevin Smith, who we talked about, was attached for a really long time trying to get the movie made. That is since... He's gone on to someone else now, and they're still trying to get the movie made. And they're talking about like Jason Sudeikis to play a young Fletch or something, you know, which I'm sure it'd be good, but nothing beats the original one. It's awesome. It's just so funny. Like you miss half the jokes because Chevy Chase is so quick through the movie. Like you just miss it. He's so sarcastic and so funny. And my friend Ryan and I, we quote this movie constantly. Like he'll just send me a text and it'll be a line from that movie and I'll just instantly know what it is. And it's definitely, like I said, it's just definitely a cult film, but not based on because it was a financial failure, but it's just bizarre. It's just like, because it's just like, it strikes a chord with like college type kids, you know, that were just like Caddyshack does. Like you can't go golfing without screaming every line from Caddyshack. And it was just like those quick little sarcastic little, you know, dumbass moments, like you can say these lines and stuff. So
right in the lumberyard.
Right. What's wrong with lumberyards? I own 2 lumberyards. See what I mean? We could just
spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, I'm not sure where they are. So we could just go on and on and on. But this is my favorite movie of all time. So if we ever did a top 5 favorite movies of all time, Fletch is my number one. Spoiler alert, I already ruined that list. But, oh, it's so good. And again, like, I named my son after it. Not totally direct. Well, let's just be honest. Yeah, I did. It's totally after this movie I named him that. But, oh, it's so funny. I mean, there's just, like my brother... My brother, there's this one scene Chevy Chase, he had to steal a car because he's trying to get away, and he stole a car from a guy stealing the car. Like, another guy was stealing his car, so Chevy Chase hops in and makes him move over, and he acts like he's a environmental protection guy, and he's like, hey, we checked your ozone, your all this stuff, and he's like, he wants to get away from the cops. So he takes off, and they're going down the highway anyway, and the cops come up to Obi. And the cops like are next to him. He's like, they're like, pull over. And he's like, I pulled over earlier. I'll pull over later. I'm not going to pull over. And then he goes, hey, Fred, how's the herpes? And like, for some reason, he just thinks he knows the guy. And he's like, how's the herpes? And like, so my brother constantly will say, hey, Tom, how's the herpes? Which is, it's just so stupid. And anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, just think, man, that family's weird, you know? There's just so, I could go on and on. There's so many lines of this movie. And if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. It's not a bad movie. It's a great movie. It's a fun mystery comedy. It's a great movie. I love this movie. Yeah. And my wife loves it. Even though now she knows our son's narrator, but she was like, it helped that she actually liked the movie too. So I was like, oh, I'm really good with that one. So there you go. That's my number.
Good pick, sir.
Thank you. What about you, Jim? What is your number one?
My number one, you actually mentioned it.
Oh, sorry.
It is 1996 Swingers.
There you go. I love that movie.
I love Swingers. And my friend Neil and I watched this in college literally every Friday. We would put on Swingers before we drank in the dorm or went to the bar or whatever we were going to do. Swingers was always our pregame movie. And this movie, I feel like people have heard of it, but a lot of people haven't seen it, I feel like. So it's a 1996 comedy drama film about the lives of single unemployed actors in on the east side of Hollywood during like the 90s swing revival, like the Big Bad Voodoo Daddies type of music.
Yeah, see, the term swingers now is different. Like, people think of it a different swingers when they think of it.
Yes.
But anyway, go ahead.
Yes. Written by Jon Favreau and directed by Doug Liman. Starred Favreau, Vince Vaughn, Ron Livingston, Heather Graham. It's a movie about just a normal guy trying to get over a girl and his friends helping him do it. And that's pretty much it. So every guy is going to like this movie. I feel like it's, he broke up or his girlfriend, was in New York. He moves to LA to pursue a comedy career and they were together for 6 years. If you see the movie, I think he says that about a dozen times.
Yeah.
And they broke up 6 months prior to him going out. So his friend Vince Vaughn's name is Trent, and he's kind of like the womanizing, loudmouth guy, and trying to get Mikey out of his shell, basically, and into the social scene. Favreau wrote this movie in a week and a half. He had just broken up with his girlfriend, and there were a lot of bidders on the movie. A lot of studios wanted to make it, but they wanted him to change a lot. They wanted him to take out the Vegas scenes. They wanted him to change Trent to a woman, or have Trent played by Johnny Depp or Chris O'Donnell or Jason Priestley.
Oh, Jesus.
And obviously none of those things happened, and the Vegas trip is one of the best parts of the entire movie.
Vegas,
so
baby.
I'm glad. See, there's so many iconic lines. Vegas, baby. Anybody who goes to Vegas says that line.
Right. Jim, you're so money.
See? That's what I'm saying. So that line, the money line that came from that, came from a basketball commercial. And the director kept calling the basketball player money in these Nike advertisements. And Favreau saw the commercials, but the first time he ever heard anybody use the term money in a real life scenario was Vince Vaughn. And he was using it on the set of Rudy when they were in that movie. But they wanted to get rid of potential investors wanted them to stop saying money. They wanted them to stop saying honey. They wanted to get rid of all the beautiful babies in the movie. They wanted all those lines gone, and they stuck by their guns, and they didn't waver, and they still got the movie made. Let's see. So due to a lack of money, Doug Liman shot the film. Doug Liman, who is known for the Bourne Identity movies and Edge of Tomorrow, he's gone on to be this amazing director. He shot on a small 35 millimeter documentary style camera that sounded like a sewing machine. So he wrapped it in a jacket around the camera and then wrapped a down comforter around that so that you wouldn't pick up the noise. Favreau said it was like acting in front of a giant snowball. Trent's license plate in the movie on that awesome car that he's got, the red convertible, is a shout out to George Lucas. It's THX 1138, nice, which is George Lucas's first movie. I thought it was really funny. It's so low budget. There's a scene where Favreau is on the phone with Vince Vaughn. He's trying to convince him to go to Vegas, that whole scene. And he's just walking around his shitty apartment. And there's a part where he opens up the refrigerator and there's nothing in the refrigerator. And the only reason he opened up the refrigerator is because there was so low budget that they needed more light to shoot the scene.
That's awesome.
That's the only reason they opened the fridge.
Oh, that's awesome.
One of the best scenes in the movie was the phone call to Nikki.
That's the worst. Oh my God. That's the,
it's so uncomfortable hard to watch. It's awful to watch this movie, this scene. Anybody who hasn't seen this, Favreau's character is very awkward and hasn't been out in the social scene, so he's trying to meet girls, and he gets this girl's number, is a pretty girl at a bar, and he goes home and calls her immediately. And there's the debate in the movie, like, oh, I always wait two days to call a girl. I always wait 3 days. I always wait 2 weeks. It's always this funny thing. And if you're single and you're dating, that's still a thing. How long do you wait before you call that number?
Right.
Or at least it was when I was dating. Now it's probably not existing anymore with different apps or whatever. But anyway, so he calls her immediately and gets her message, her answering machine, which don't exist anymore either. So he leaves a message and he calls her like 7 times. And through the course of his messages, he goes through the span of an entire relationship with her and ends up breaking up with her on her answering machine. And then she was there the whole time. And picks up the phone. And he's, hey, you were there the whole time. And she's like, don't ever call me again. So
sad.
This scene, he was an usher at Second City. And there was a comedian, Jeff Garland, did a one-man show called I Want Someone to Eat Cheese With, which I can relate to.
Right. And I love cheese.
It was kind of taken from one of his bits. It wasn't directly taken, but he found inspiration from one of his bits in that. And they fought with him. The studio fought with him, saying that it's too much. It's too much. You have too many phone calls on this. And he's like, no, this is the right amount of times I should be calling her. And nobody liked it. The crew didn't like it. Nobody thought it was going to be a good scene. And from your reaction, you don't like the scene, but it's very memorable.
Well, it's memorable. It's not that I don't like it. It's just, it's so difficult to watch. Because I think men and women, we've all been there where like, you made a phone call or did something you didn't, that didn't go right, and then you keep trying to make it better.
Yeah,
and it's how it starts off. But then, like you said, he just starts going on with this relationship with this girl via phone messages. But like, it's just like it's like stop calling back. It will be better if you just don't call. You know, like you just get this so feeling. Oh, this is Jim. This is one of those movies, just like The Big Lebowski, that I've probably seen the beginning of this movie 30,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
maybe the first half hour, because you'd come home in college from the bar or wherever and be drunk, you pop this in or The Big Lebowski, I've seen the beginning so many times. I've actually only seen like the end of Swingers maybe like 5 times, because like I always would pass out or something, you know.
I'm the asshole. No, I'm the asshole.
Yeah.
When Vince Vaughn's at the diner, at the end, he's on the diner.
Yeah.
He's standing on the table. Oh, so I'm the asshole.
It's a great movie.
It is. I love this movie. I love the scene where they have a friend named Sue because his dad was a big Johnny Cash fan, and he pulls a gun on some people. And I'm from LA, from Anaheim. And then they end up playing like Sega hockey and making Superfan number 99 head bleed. And it just like such a great movie. There's a scene where they go to a party in the Hollywood Hills and it's an actual party. They didn't stage anything. They just went to a party because all these guys were just young and unemployed actors. So they just went to a friend's party. And the friends of the crews lived in the Hollywood Hills. So two of the four residents later ended up being producers for the Twilight movies. And then also Adam Scott was just there at the party, just an actor there. And he ended up, he's been in a lot of stuff. He was in Party Down and he's really funny. I think he was in Parks and Rec and he didn't even know. He was just hanging out at the party and he had no idea why there were cameras there. He didn't even think to ask. I thought this was funny. There's this scene where they go to approach a girl and they're playing the Jaws theme song.
Yeah.
So to get the licensing for that, they had to have Spielberg sign off on it. And they had to send him a tape of Swingers to get him to sign off to use that theme song. And because of that tape, he casted Vince Vaughn in The Lost World.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good nugget of info right there.
And also because of Swingers, Vince Vaughn was offered the part of Donnie Darko, but obviously turned that down for an age thing.
And I would say, going back to Jurassic Park, The Lost World, Vince Vaughn's the best part of that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, go ahead.
In the casino, when they're playing blackjack, and he has the whole thing like, you always double down on 11. Always double down on 11. He doubles down and loses. The woman who's sitting next to him who wins, the older lady, is Favreau's grandmother. And Vince Vaughn's father is also at the table. They went to Vegas with him to shoot it.
That's awesome.
And my friend Neil, all throughout college, called me Double Down. That was my nickname. Because after that scene, Favreau calls Vince Vaughn Double Down for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So my friend Neil always called me that. And the other line we quoted every line in this movie, but the thing he would say at a bar, if we'd be at the bar just hanging out, college bar, a girl would walk by and he would stop her and go, hey, 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 see this guy? This is the guy behind the guy behind the guy.
You've said that many times to me.
I probably did use that too. And it gets the same reaction because not a lot of people have seen this, especially girls haven't seen this movie. So they just look at you and, and then just walk away every time.
Well, yeah, that's not going to work.
No, and that's kind of the reaction you want when you use an asshole line like that. So it's fine. But Swingers is one of my favorite movies of all time, let alone cult classic movies. And it's just so quotable, and it's such a guy movie, a single guy movie.
Yeah, it's so money.
I love it.
It's just money.
It's so money. So money.
Vegas, baby. I think you've actually told you said that I'm the asshole line to me a few times. You'd be like, "Oh, so I'm the asshole." So and you know what, Jim? You are the asshole. Oh man! Well, good, man. Jim. That was some good lists there. I like those.
Yeah, this was like a good one.
I do, Jim. I do recommend. I really think you would love Johnny Dangerously. I really want you to watch that movie. And I'm not just saying it because it's on. I think you would really enjoy it. So. Please watch it. It's probably on Netflix or something. Maybe not. Who knows? But, good. Well, what's, that was good. That was good. What are we doing next week? Oh, I already know what we're doing next week.
What are we doing next week?
We are doing, because it is the season, Jim, for TV shows to be wrapping up. And so I thought we would do TV series finales, our top five series finales of all time.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay. In all genres, comedies, dramas, anything. So just, so I thought that would that'd be fun, you know? What do you think?
TV shows or movies?
TV shows, series finales of TV shows.
TV shows, okay.
If you come next week and you say Roseanne was the best season series finale, I'm hanging up the phone.
Can I go back and realize that I just asked a really stupid question? Because why would a movie have a finale?
I know. I just let it go. And okay. I'm gonna let Thank the people
you.
Out there.
I think I was thinking like a drama, like a serious drama, like a Sopranos or a comedy show like Scrubs. For some reason, my mind interpreted that to movies or TV shows, and I don't know why.
Can I also go back into when I said you're the asshole? Sorry.
Are we done?
No, yeah. So TV Yeah, we should just be done. TV series.
Speaking of this, I just watched the series finale of Girls last night on HBO, and it was awful.
Oh, really?
The last episode was awful.
Yeah, see, you know, there's not a lot of great, this is going to be good for next week, but there's not a lot of great series finales. Because one, if you like the show, you don't want it to end. And a lot of them never live up to your expectations. There's a few, and I got my list already started. There's a few that do live up to your expectations, but there's some that just doesn't, they fall flat, you know? And so this would be a good.
Yeah, and
good
it ruins the whole series, actually. It
ruins the series for you. You're right. Oh, my Lord. All right. Well, Jim, where can everyone find us, talk to us?
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Gmail. All right, cool.
Thank you.
We are also, of course, on iTunes and Stitcher and Podbean. And hey, Jim, we are now on Google Play.
That's awesome because that's all I use is Google Play.
So we're this many episodes in, and have you even listened to our show then? Since you
I told you I use an app called Podcast Republic. Oh, but if I have an option, I would rather use it through Google Play.
There you go. Well, we are now on Google Play, so please check us out there, and everywhere. And we got and keep giving us reviews. We appreciate that. That helps more people find us. So this is great. Well, Jim, I'm done with you tonight. This is it. I'm done.
Thank God.
Thank God. All right, Jim. I'm going to call you back in 5 minutes.
I'm going to draw a bat.
Oh, good night. Love you.